MLB, NBA, NHL, NFL, Score Big has all the sports tickets you want at up to 60% off. It's easy to use. I've used it myself. All you got to do is log on to sportsgamblingpodcast.com and click the Score Big icon. Score Big, the lead pipe lock for great game tickets. Sports Gambling Podcast. I am Sean, stacking the money green with my partner in picks, Ryan, Real Money Kramer, for the championship edition of the Sports Gambling Podcast. Ryan, how'd the divisional round treat you?
Pretty well. Pretty much the only thing I did horrible, I'd have to review what I advertised picking, but I'm pretty sure I got everything right but the Carolina game. I don't know. I mean, you want to walk through them?
Yeah, no, we'll do it.
Reflect on how we did. It was a very good weekend for me, money-wise.
It ended up, I think game-wise, well, the San Francisco-Carolina one. On the podcast, I was with you with Carolina, but then I did one of those blogs and researched more on San Francisco and ended up, I think for my pick, I said take the over 41, but when I actually predicted the score in the blog, I gave it to San Francisco. Just after doing like more research on it and really breaking it down in further detail in the blog, it definitely seemed like a good spot here for San Francisco. But I think we're getting ahead of ourselves, Ryan. I ended up doing really well on some props, especially that Broncos-Chargers game. We'll get to, but
we'll get to that, but I think clean sweep on the props in the Broncos game.
Well, yeah, let's start with the Saturday action. Seattle Seahawks 23, Saints 15. My big play in this game was Seattle -7, -120.
Nice.
Oh, and I also hit the Marshawn Lynch over rushing yards. That felt pretty sweet there.
Yeah, so I got it right in front of me, Sean. You projected a Seahawks 30-20 win.
Okay.
Like you said, you hit -7. You hit the Marshawn Lynch over rushing yards. My official play was under 46.
Ooh, there you go.
I predicted a 27-17 final score.
Pretty close.
And I actually, for my bonus pick, I made it total sacks over 5, which came out to be a loss or a push, I believe.
They were close.
And but I also mentioned that please tease the Seahawks to -2 and the Pats to -1.
Yeah, I mean, in hindsight,
it seemed too easy.
Well, that's what we were talking about when we were, and I was thinking with the AFC games, you take both money underdog money lines in the hopes that one of those guys is going to cash. But man, just looking at these final four teams, we got San Francisco, Seattle, Patriots, Broncos, and honestly, if you gave most NFL fans the ability to choose four teams that they thought would be in the final four, you might get this result exactly.
Yeah, I think a lot of people had,
I mean, the 1 and 2 in the AFC, and by a lot of counts, the 1 and 2 in the NFC. Obviously, San Francisco couldn't have been the second seed because they were in the same division as Seattle, but you could definitely make a case that San Francisco should have been seeded too.
Forgetting the spread, I think the majority had this combination over any other combination.
Yeah, of final four teams. It's weird that there's no surprise team, which is surprising.
I mean, to be fair, San Francisco, not so much a surprise, but they're definitely playing. Like, they're coming. They're if you're going to have to pencil, you have to give one team the label of the wild card who got hot. San Francisco's definitely playing their best football right now.
Yeah, I mean, they had a season there where they're kind of middling in the beginning. Or, I mean, in the middle of the season, they were just playing not great. And, yeah, just turned it on. Colin Kaepernick's been killing it. But a little bit more on this Seattle-New Orleans game. Seattle did it with, I mean, quietly, Russell Wilson has been struggling. And as a Seahawks fan or as a Seahawks backer, are you worried about that going into this week against the 49ers?
You know, I tried to after the games on Sunday, I figured what I would do is I would try to listen to as much talk radio and Sports Center and shit as possible before the podcast, because I wanted to see what everyone was thinking. Because, you know, it's conference championship time. People are making picks Monday. I wanted to see what everyone was saying. And the storyline for the Seahawks is obviously the offense has to do more. Now, I think a lot of people who didn't watch this game might think this game was a little closer than it actually was. Not to say New Orleans didn't close the gap down the end, but this was a game that was, I think it's fair to say, was dominated. I mean, when the score was 16-3?
Yeah.
It felt like a little bit more than that.
Yeah, I don't, as a Seattle guy, even getting the -7, obviously sweated it out there a little bit at the end with Drew Brees scoring and then the Seahawks, or Drew Brees scoring, or sorry, the Saints scoring and then possibly going for two.
Yeah.
But even before that, I didn't really feel that worried, honestly, about the Seahawks -7.
It was a strange game because the Seahawks, it was more about what the Seahawks were doing to the Saints on defense. And yeah, the offense struggled, but you know, I think a lot of teams would take a bad day and score 23 points. Now,
yeah, and then maybe that's the argument there, is that Seattle, even on a bad day at home, you're still not going to put up points against
them. I'm just saying, think about Seattle from a couple years ago. When they were bad, they were putting up 13. I think we're overthinking this a bit, and I think it's, you know, no one's talking about how San Francisco's offense struggled.
Yeah.
I mean, what would be...
But I think 23 points on the road and...
Oh, no, I agree, but I'm just saying from the perspective of...
Well, it's a numbers thing too, right? Like Kaepernick, his numbers have been great. Their past 8 games they've won. Russell Wilson, I mean, for a while there, he was like, one of 8 in the second half?
Oh, yeah, his numbers...
That's why that's concerning.
Not great, and they're definitely hurt in the wide receiver.
And then they also lost late to Arizona. So I think that loss is possibly still in people's minds.
Sure, but I think it's unfair to say Kaepernick lit it up last week also.
I think he had a pretty good game. I mean,
let's talk about that when we get to that game. But
okay,
anyway, the point being, I think we're overthinking this. The Saints didn't score a point until the fourth quarter. You know, at that point, to score, who knows? I'm not making excuses. I just worry that we've gotten ourselves to a situation where people are trying, like, look, going against the number one team nowadays is kind of the trendy thing to do. You picking the underdog, and I think people are looking harder at Denver and Seattle to find reasons why they won't win, and not looking to the team they're playing to find why they will win, if that makes sense. Why is Seattle's gonna have to do better. No one's talking about the fact that San Francisco's defense is not as good as it once, not as good as it was last year, the year before. I just think, I don't know. We'll see. I guess we'll see.
But Seattle, New Orleans, it just seemed the game came down to New Orleans, and the Saints just couldn't do anything on offense, and they were able to get by with that same kind of sputtering offense against the Eagles because the Eagles' defense not quite as strong as Seattle. I mean, this was, I think, kind of a fairly similar game to the Eagles-Saints game, but with the difference being Seattle's defense is obviously better and they have a stronger home field advantage.
I think part of it, too, is just I think Seattle knew going in that the one thing that New Orleans did decently on defense is pass defense, so they were just going to run the shit out of the rock.
Well, and also I think New Orleans kind of showed their hand against the Eagles that, hey, we're a dome team. We're just going to pound the rock. And Jimmy Graham's been neutralized via either coverage and injury. So our game plan is just going to be to pound the rock. And Seattle, I think, had a game plan where they were prepared for that and just held, you know, stop drives.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, look, it still comes down to, I mean, I think the matchup next week will still come down to, you know, which quarterback plays better. But I'm not concerned. I mean, if there's one thing I've learned watching Russell Wilson, the dude, like you said, after they lost last year, he's composed, he's calm, and he wants to go take care of business. So why would I think that one, you know, below average game is going to create some sort of, you know.
Yeah, but you look at his, I mean, it's not one game. Look at his stats of the past four games. He has not been sharp. He hasn't been on the same level that he was earlier in the season. He's not. The Seattle offense is not lighting people up. Now, maybe that's a combination of not having Percy Harvin.
They didn't have Percy Harvin all year.
Well, I mean, especially. Look at his numbers past four games, and he has not been. He hasn't been lighting things up. It's a cause of concern.
Yeah, no, I think it's a fair thing to bring up, but I think. Like, kind of like the theme, I feel like the theme for me this week, like kind of like it was last week, not as much. This week, a lot more. Is just don't overthink it.
Yeah.
And, you know, look, you're right. Down the stretch, they lost two games. They lost two divisional games.
Yeah.
But they still went third, you know, they still won. They went 6-2 down the stretch. You know, like, I don't.
Yeah, they had a great year. I'm just saying, as of late, Russell Wilson has been in a funk and not playing as well as he was playing earlier in the season. It seems like the national media and other people aren't talking. You don't hear Russell Wilson being in a funk, partly because they're in the championship game at home. So
I think
it's hard
to
really build a case.
But I think people are saying that. I think people are saying that Russell Wilson needs to play better. And, you know, guys, let's not overthink this. The guy's been a great quarterback, but his stats have never been. He's had some good games, but overall, I don't think, if you look at his stats from last year, they're not Peyton Manning.
Yeah, I think he brings a sense of leadership to the team that.
I mean, he only threw for 3,300 yards this year. That's
only 3,300 yards, Ryan?
Yeah, look, at this point, 4,000 yards is kind of a good. It's a barometer for if you're like a top passing quarterback. And I don't know, last year, so actually if you look at his stat, I'm looking at his stat lines, 2012 and 2013, 64 completion percentage last year, 63 this year, 3,100 yards last year, 33 this year, 7.93 yards an attempt last year, 8.25, both years, 26 touchdowns last year, 10 interceptions this year, 9 interceptions. He's got more fumbles this year. So I would, much like I said going into the game last week, the reason I like the over for sacks is I thought, I mean, he's had a quarterback rating over 100 both years in the NFL. But his QBR is lower this year, and that's because he's taking more sacks. And I would say that's the biggest flaw that he has going into this game, is he's maybe holding the ball for a little too long. But I think that actually kind of blew my mind how similar his seasons were. I mean, he's kind of a game manager that has the ability to win, you know, make a play to win you the game, you know.
Yeah, it's like a poor man's Nick Foles. But okay, moving on.
Yeah, go for it. No, I don't want to talk about this anymore.
No,
I want to talk more about it, but wait till we get to the matchup.
Okay. Indianapolis Colts at the New England Patriots. Colts got manhandled 22-43. New England did it on the ground. Should have seen a little bit more of that coming. I was kind of a sucker for Indy. I feel like I handicapped the game right when I said this reminds me of when Tebow went up there. But then I went against myself, and I got sucked in by the Andrew Luck mystique, Ryan. I'll admit, it's my flaw as a gut handicapper. Sometimes the emotions get the best of you. But my buddy Andy Luck bailed me out with over 250.5 passing yards. That seemed like a pretty easy prop. And I actually took the over on Brady as well. That didn't come in. I stayed away from actually betting this, which I was proud of myself.
Yeah, Sean, I mean, you took the Colts in the column. You predicted a 34-31 game, Brady over 270.5. I'm guessing that didn't come in. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Should have went. I didn't realize when I wrote that, I didn't think about how low Andrew Lux would be.
So, yeah, like we were doing the breakdowns, like you said, like – I was tasked with making the case for Indy, and it was really, like, after doing that, it made me very confident that they didn't have a chance. I mean, short of some sort of godly activity happening. I took the Patriots laying the 7. I predicted 31-21. I had a largest lead over 16.5 plus 125.
Oh,
that
nice.
Was the one I really liked just because, I mean, we see it all year. Indy falls behind, then you do something miraculous.
Yeah, well, that's what you said, barring a miracle. But this team seemed like they had a bunch
but
of miracles.
But look what happens when there isn't a miracle. I mean, the thing about this game that I felt is interesting, I thought it was a bad line. I think we talked about it on the podcast. I thought
7.5, that's trap.
Yeah, we talked about how it felt. Both 7.5-point spreads felt trappy, right?
Yeah.
Both for Seattle and New England. And I just thought New England at home doesn't get the respect that Seattle and New Orleans do at home. But is it really much different? They just take care of business at home. And
yeah, well, they don't. It's not the flashiness of the crowd going crazy. The crowd isn't a factor, but the home field is. You look at Tom Brady's record and Bill Belichick's record at home.
It's
Tom
like
80%. Brady just ATS. It's insane. So if you're playing against the Patriots at home, even ATS, in my mind, you got to build a stronger case. And I should have seen that coming.
Sorry, go ahead, Sean.
Real quick on that Seattle-Saints game, that was interesting because it was at 7.5 for most of the week, and then betting syndicates came in.
It went up to, 11?
I didn't see 11. Guys were tweeting at us.
Oh, no, 9.5, sorry.
9.5, 10 points.
Yeah.
And I told people this. I was like, I got it at 7 minus 120. I feel good at that, but when you get to 9.5 and 10, I think you got to take the Saints. So,
you know what?
Rare double... cover there.
You know what? Yeah, you would have middled, Sean. But you know what prevented me from doing that is I had the same thought week 13 when Seattle was hosting New Orleans and the spread jumped up to 6.5, 7. It's like, well, you got to grab them now. But I think the last point about – I don't think there's much to talk about in this New England game. I have a feeling you're not going to see this game plan against Denver next week. This was a single-serving game plan. Maybe you'll see a little bit of the running game, but much like Seattle, I think the game wasn't as close as the final score indicated. If you just looked at the box score, I think New England, the game was closer. And I think
Indy had some shots there.
Yeah, and then but New England like went from a 7-point game to a 21-point game really quickly.
Well, and what luck couldn't those interceptions were bad interceptions by bad luck. Also, on that punt play, this was driving me crazy. I feel like the refs the announcers didn't highlight enough where the New England punter, he went through right through his hands. He should have kicked it out of bounds for the automatic safety. Instead, he tries to pick it up and tries to throw it, which is insane. Because an incomplete pass there, then the Colts get the ball right there.
Yep.
Or a fumble. Luckily,
that's one of those godly activities.
I mean, Bill Belichick must have sold this soul to the devil. I don't know. That was a huge break. I mean, if you turn that into a Colts page or Colts touchdown, that's a huge swing.
Huge turn in the game.
So, classic Patriots. That is one thing that's comforting when you do bet on the Patriots. You feel like you get a couple extra breaks, you get a couple extra calls, and you get a couple. There's always a couple tricks up Bill Belichick's sleeveless sweatshirt that you know you're gonna have the right side on. So there is some comfort in taking the Pats, as much as I find them a disgusting football team.
Yes.
And not fun to root for.
No.
San Francisco 49ers, Ryan, went in the den of Carolina and Cam Newton and worked the Carolina Panthers 23-10. It was a game early, but San Francisco dominated the second half, shutting out Cam, a.k.a. Sham Newton. Ryan, you've been a huge advocate for the Panthers.
This game, I mean,
I'll let you take the mic from here.
All right, so Sean, we you can tell everyone I'm actually taking my sweatshirt right now to prepare myself.
Ryan's getting fired
I'm starting
up.
To get sweat a little bit. All right,
who's the scapegoat?
Look, no, it's Cam Newton's fault.
Oh, wow!
It's the quarterback. You got to take the. But here was my take on the game. around the goal line, like, what happened to the shotgun Cam Newton at Auburn play or the Tim Tebow Florida play? Where was that? Why are you running conventional plays? When they got stuffed the first time, okay, defense holds, you're good. But when you get stuffed the second time, look, I think that was the first thing. That was the coach getting nervous, not being creative, being very, very predictable. And the second thing I'll say about the coach is there's no one else to blame for personal fouls than the coach. The coach, I mean, look, I hate Jim Harbaugh. Jim Harbaugh, his teams are always prepared. They never get stupid personal foul penalties.
Well, except when Jim Harbaugh got one on himself.
Except for when he gets one on himself. But the point is, Ron Rivera did not have this team ready, including the way the game ended. The guy got a personal foul to end the game, to give him a first down, game over. I think this Carolina team, now, I think I even made the argument in the blog, in the breakdown, that, or at least about other teams, that, look, I don't really give a shit if you've done it before. Well, with this team, I think this might be a good learning experience, a good building block, because they weren't ready for this moment.
They seemed really unprepared.
Yeah, Cam made some bad throws, but I think the bigger issue with this game was the play call. They tried to do too much different shit. They weren't their team. They weren't the team that got them there, and eventually the defense just couldn't hold up any longer. I think Ron Rivera went back to – he wasn't Riverboat Ron or Analytical Ron. He went back to being – super conservative.
Ryan just dropped his mic out of he can't handle the shock of Carolina getting knocked out. A couple things here, Ryan. I agree. Ron Rivera, poor coaching. I mean, yeah, it's one thing to go for it, and the first time they ended up getting the ball back and getting their only touchdown. But the second time, yeah, the play calling at the goal line was not good.
No, the going for it is not what I had a problem with. It's you shouldn't have to go for it. I've said it all year. Ron Rivera is a bad coach. And there's no, I don't think anyone's going to argue that. And he got a little bit of a break this year because he became Riverboat Ron and started going for it when you're supposed to go for it. I don't know. It's like that Chris Rock bit, right? Like, I take care of my kids. You're supposed to. Like,
I go for it on fourth down. Supposed to.
We've gotten to the point where we're giving coaches credit for doing things they're supposed to do. It's like, oh, he actually called a timeout at the right time. You know, anyway, it's disappointing. But San Francisco, clearly the better. I mean, I think maybe more than any of the other teams that won, maybe the most dominant performance.
Well, especially
I would put it on par with Seattle. They basically dominated three quarters of the game,
especially that second half. Not letting Carolina score in the second half. I think that's a hallmark of a great team. You close out teams. You don't let them stick around. Carolina, to me, from an emotional standpoint, and what worried me was I felt like after they beat the Saints at home, that was their Super Bowl. They beat the Saints at home. It legitimized them.
It basically
gave them the division. All they had to do from there was coast against the Falcons. They did. They coasted. Barely beat the Falcons. And then they have a week off to just celebrate being the Panthers. And I think they came out flat. And especially in the second half, just couldn't get fired up for the game. Just couldn't get around and
coaching,
moving the
ball. Bro. There's a lot of
coaching. And you talk about Cam Newton, obviously didn't have a great game throwing the ball, but from a leadership perspective, you need to put the team on your back there in the second half and make some big plays, run the ball as a scrambler. I mean, you consider yourself a dynamic playmaker. You need to make something happen in the second half. There's no way you should get blanked in the second half at home.
Yeah, I can't argue with that.
Ryan, speak to the conspiracy theorists out there that say there's some conspiracy theorists on Twitter saying that this game was rigged, the NFL had it in, that Carolina was too sharp
to
play.
Forget, like, I love a good conspiracy as much as the next, but let's not even try to put sports fixing in conspiracy column, because I feel like they're two different things.
Okay.
But like my man Vicious V was saying on Twitter. I think that's who was saying it, right?
Yeah.
I like how he dominated someone into submission on Twitter. Vicious V is if you ever need a beef settled, just send that guy. He's awesome.
Pitbull of the gambling podcast world.
He's a Twitter pitbull. Anyway, he was right though. I mean, look, obviously I'm somewhat biased. I picked the Panthers +1. I thought the Panthers would win the game. I also despise the 49ers, but the Panthers were not prepared. They kind of fell into the 49ers trap with some of the personal fouls, but I'll highlight two very specific plays. The play where Cam Newton gets basically like driven into the ground after he throws it, no personal foul, and then that pass interference play in the very early in the game. There were some bad calls, but there's bad calls in every game, right?
Yep.
It's just when it's the playoffs and there's only four games on, it just magnifies it.
Well, and
now if you were going to ask me, I thought two games had horrendous officiating. I thought the New England game, New England got a crap load of calls, and I think San Francisco got a crap load of calls. I think Denver, some people were complaining about that. I think Denver and San Diego, look, there were some bad calls in terms of the timeliness of them, but overall, I thought the officials had a good game in the Denver game and the Seattle game.
Yeah, I would say, obviously, San Francisco got the better of the calls there. But there were also a few calls against the 49ers that were equally bad.
Yeah,
which leads me to believe that it's a result of poor officiating and not some sort of intentional thing.
And what made it even more, arguable that there was some sort of conspiracy is a couple of the bad calls that went against San Francisco by way of how much time was on the clock and other things, they turned out to not even mean it. It's like when you get that personal foul penalty after the touchdown with like 5 seconds left in the half.
Well, that
they should look into if there's a personal foul with less than 10 seconds and it's going to a kickoff situation, they should be able to defer that to the second half.
Because under a 2-minute warning or something. You're right. Like 5 seconds because then like you can something, just light some dude up.
Like they should define what. You basically like a kickoff return with 10 seconds or whatever. It kind
of. Now, I don't remember the situation of this one, but the defensive lineman who took down Cam Newton and then basically was like tackling him, and the other guy came in to get him.
Yeah.
And basically Cam Newton turned and hit his head against the
guy. Oh, no. It was the guy dove over. It was an offsides at the goal line.
Oh, no. I'm not talking about that.
Oh, you're not talking
about
that one. Oh.
Well, when Cam Newton had a hilarious flop.
You mean he had a hilarious LeBron?
All right, we'll get to that. All right, well, hold on. Let me finish my point. But one where he turns and he just basically bumps into the San Francisco 49er guy. Like he basically put his head into the 49er guy, and the 49ers got called for the sportsmanlike there.
Which is obviously a bad call, but we're getting...
I think what happened, too, was that the game got chippy, and the refs got... flag happy, and they were catching Carolina in a lot of being the second guy.
Well, you also brought they weren't disciplined, but you also brought it up that you thought early in the game when we were watching the game they wanted to set the tone, and that's why San Francisco got some calls early. It was just a product of who had the ball, and it was. I think that my biggest problem with when a game is called poorly is when it's inconsistent, like. It's fine if you're going to be consistent and let players – like let the 49ers – look, we've always said this, right? When the 49ers can hold on defense, they're a very tough team to beat. And they were allowing them to hold on defense, but then they were calling ticky-tack fouls on Carolina's back end. That's where you get to a point where it becomes shady. I'll say that.
Yeah. I mean, you never know if – with a ton of money involved, it could go one way or the other.
Anyway, Sean, real quick, recap who we had, at least in the column. I had Panthers +1. You had over 41, Sean.
Bad call.
Bad call. You had Vernon Davis over 47.5 yards. Did that cash, Sean?
I feel like it didn't.
No, it did not. Vernon Davis had 1 yard and a touchdown. I had Colin Kaepernick under 217.5 yards passing. This is what I wanted to get to a little earlier when you're talking about Colin Kaepernick lighting it up.
I didn't say he lit it up.
You said he was doing well down the stretch. But my point is, I took a couple props. I took the under on his rushing yards, 40.5, under on his passing yards, 217.5. And both those came in pretty easily. Didn't even come close to it.
What was his stat line? What was his final line?
And the one thing I took away from watching Colin Kaepernick, I thought he played a pretty good game, but I do think that he needs to have the ability to bust a couple of those like 15-yard third down runs to really like change a game. And I was also very shocked at how poorly he throws the ball when running.
Yeah, he doesn't. That's what's awesome about Russell Wilson. You see him.
It's like crazy. Like one guy is short and, you know, not the fastest guy in the world, but very quick and a great pocket presence and throws great balls while running. The other guy is this insane athlete, 6'5", can run faster than anyone on the field. But his weakness is definitely that mobile throw. I think when he doesn't set his feet, his balls tend to.
Colin Kaepernick doesn't look comfortable in the pocket. He just doesn't look comfortable as a quarterback in general. I don't know. Maybe it's just his body language.
Here's the stat line. 15 for 28, 196, one touchdown, one sack. I mean, look, not bad.
Yeah,
again,
over 50%. Yeah.
Also, I mean, I think Kaepernick and Wilson are both in interesting situations where they're kind of just game managers because they have great offensive lines and great running backs.
Great defense.
And great defense is that they're kind of like the new age flashy manage the game quarterbacks. And whereas on the flip side in the AFC, you see the ultimate, you know, put the team on your back, call every play from the line
school.
Of scrimmage. Yeah. It is the new school versus the old school.
But, all right, speaking of Greybeard, last game of divisional playoff round, we got the San Diego Superchargers going into Colorado, Rocky Mountain High, Broncos 24-17, did not cover the spread, and
it depends. It did. I know it got near seven, so okay. It could have been a push,
but
yeah,
I feel like most
the
of
consensus,
had
I agree.
Chargers. My dad was in Vegas, told me what to take. I told him to take Chargers +8. He cashed that ticket.
Oh, nice.
He gave me a lot of shit, though, during the game saying the Chargers sucked and I owed him $45 or whatever. But they did. They pulled out the late cover. And, man, when they got that onside kick, you could just collectively hear the entire stadium's butthole clench up thinking, oh, my God.
It's happening.
It's falling apart again. And, man, it's so easy to second-guess these decisions, but I would have been fine with another onside kick as a fan. I would have been, as a gambler, that might have cost me the +8 because you set up the Broncos for another field goal, but I would have just said do it because that onside kick that he had was awesome. I can't remember seeing an onside kick that high, and I think he was like 3 for 6 for onside kicks this year.
He's good at it.
Maybe guys just get a hot hand with that onside kick, but I would have, as a Chargers fan, I would have loved to seen that onside kick again.
What did Herm Edwards once say? You play to win the game.
And it's you're kicking off, and I get it. You hold them to 3 and out. It prolongs the game. It gives you a shot. There's plenty of time on the clock. And Peyton Manning, is he going to be tense? Is he going to throw some incompletes there?
Fuck all that, Sean.
There's a lot of wind.
You kicked the – kicker just kicked the greatest onside kick I've ever seen.
Yeah. Now, if you're a fan and they don't get that onside kick and then get the first down, but in a way, it sounds weird. The field position in my mind in that situation doesn't matter, right? Because if anything, you're just giving them more field position to get first downs in a certain sense. All they need basically is what, two, depending on how many plays it takes to get a first down. Now, maybe McCoy was right because they put him in a 3rd and 17, and that they stop him there. The game's over. They're right back in the game. So maybe that was the right decision, but poor play calling on 3rd and 17.
Yeah.
Either way, an exciting game here, especially in the second half.
Very exciting from a gambling perspective, Sean.
Very.
Especially if you follow at Gambling Podcast and you ripped off some of those props we were throwing out.
Yeah.
So in the column, Sean. Officially, I took under 54.5. That jumped up to 55, 55.5 at times. And before the game, I was a little drunk. We had been watching, you know, and I was like, Sean, you got to take this under. This is the lock, divisional game. Both other games went. It felt great.
The wind, right? We talk about this on the podcast. For you guys out there, this is a great gambling rule. You want to talk about surefire rules. If it's rain or snow,
don't care.
It doesn't affect the total. If anything, I would blindly lean to an over because I feel like snow and rain in a way benefits
touchdowns.
Either defensive touchdowns or as an offense, you're more likely to break a play because someone slips, etc.
Yeah, the offense knows where they're trying to run to. The defense doesn't.
And that snowball, Eagles hit the over easily. Yeah. What I like to advise... Yeah. Pretty easily. What I like to advise my clients is when you see a lot of wind, not 10, 15 yards, but when you're getting those gusts up to 40 to 50 miles an hour, you see that flagpole whipping around, that's when you're thinking under, especially with these teams that have two good quarterbacks.
So with the exception of, most situations, wind isn't going to, short of a tornado or hurricane, wind's not going to be consistently blowing 25, 30, 40 miles an hour. But if you find the situations where it's a nice 20-mile-an-hour wind that's gusting up to 50, and when I flipped on the NFL Network that morning and I saw the paper fly out of the reporter's hands, I was like, oh.
Another great telltale sign. When you see, now this, sometimes you might be too late, but maybe you can get an in-game wager. If you see debris on the field, that's always telltale sign.
So, of course, my play was I did have Chargers plus 10, and I did have Broncos money line, which I miraculously middled. Very nice. But the under was my big play. I talked you into it. I talked you into the under, or there will be my official prop or bonus pick. There will not be a score in the first 5.5 minutes. I don't know if you took that with me, Sean, but cash. Again, win. Plus they're going to be a little conservative. You had the Chargers money line.
That was a little bit.
You had Decker over yards. But the other props that you talked me into, the Peyton Manning under 327.5. Again, wind. And just I thought it was going to be a low-scoring game. And lastly, I think the prop that we both put the most on, or at least I did, was
I didn't go as heavy, but yeah, I hit
longest field goal under 45.5 yards, and God, that was maybe the most exciting prop I've ever bet. It's that whole, you know, you're watching them get into field goal range, and it's like, we need them to get 10 more yards to make it a 45 yarder. Of course, they kick a 45 yarder, and was it the Broncos had a chance to kick a 47 yarder?
Yep.
In the fourth quarter, he pulls it. We cash the prop. I clean sweep, Sean. I got every bet I made on this game right, and it was a beautiful way to end the weekend.
Yeah, I did.
Oh, and what else did we take, Sean? Under for the first half, 27.5. Yeah. I don't know if I tweeted that out, though.
I did lose on the Chargers money line, but like you said, I hit on under first half, under for the game, Peyton Manning under 327.5. It just felt great. And I like San Diego money line, and that was partly playing into my theory that I thought one of these teams would upset, would be there would be an upset somewhere in the AFC.
Yeah.
But I told we watched the game with our super fan, Chargers super fan Justin, who
bolo tie and all.
If you follow the At Gambling podcast, you can enjoy some of his. He wore a bolo. Tie.
I think what Sean was trying to say is there's a picture of him somewhere in the feed.
Yes, exactly. Go check that out. It's definitely worth looking at.
It is refreshing to watch a game with passionate fans because living in California, for those of you who don't live in Los Angeles, I guess more specifically, people really don't give a shit.
Well, San Diego, I feel the same.
Yeah, Southern California. And people really don't give a shit about football to the point where it's strange that me and Sean built a TV stand so we could have more TVs to watch football on. So it is really refreshing watching a game with a fairly – the franchise of the Chargers hasn't exactly done much ever.
No.
So a very, struggling franchise, watching a fan on a suffering team, get close – just – At the end of the game, he's shouting at the TV, I don't care. I love this team. They got heart. You know, like.
And we had some lucky thing going where every time the Chargers had a good play, he had to tighten the bolo tie.
Yeah.
And at the end there, late, like after they recover the onside kick and after they score, the tie was getting pretty tight.
It was getting tight. But I was like, dude, Phillip Rivers is playing through the pain. Ryan Matthews wasn't, unfortunately, but.
Well, that's the thing. And that's why maybe.
And the biggest news, Sean. About that, the streak has ended.
Oh, that the team who plays the Eagles in their home opener wins the Super Bowl.
The team who is lucky enough to head to the link to open the Eagles season.
That just shows if you want a result, you can find a trend for it.
Yeah, it's called data mining. That's, I mean.
Well, and I think the real problem with San Diego was they came in thinking we're going to do the same game plan that worked before, run the ball and conservative passing with.
Yeah, but you know
Phillip Rivers, but they got stuffed. Yep. Ryan Matthews got hurt, and they couldn't adjust. They should have been airing it out with Rivers early on in that first half once they saw that Denver was prepared for that game plan. And part of it maybe is a Wisenhunt kind of checking out as an offensive coordinator, going to interview for all these teams. I really don't like that, getting ready for a divisional round. They should just put all coaches' hires.
I thought you couldn't. See, I always thought it was you couldn't interview unless you were the team with the bye. But yeah,
I think they can say no, maybe.
Yeah, teams, it seems odd that you wouldn't say no. I guess, you know, how often you get a chance to be a head coach, but it's like, come on, man, you're trying to win a Super Bowl.
Well, that's how the Chargers got their coach from the previous year. Mike McCoy was interviewing during that week. So both those guys.
How'd that work out for the Broncos?
Exactly. So maybe they feel hypocritical that they couldn't.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I think, I was actually kind of pulling for the Chargers there. It was kind of disappointing.
What's not to like about the Chargers, man?
But now that it's set up like it's set up, I'm kind of happy. I think at the end of the day, these are the matchups that we wanted to see. And rarely do you actually get the matchups you want to see. And I think on both sides, I think it's fair to say the four best teams in football are still playing.
Very fair, Ryan.
All right.
You want to get to the breakdown of the games?
Yes, Sean. I do. So depressing. There's only three games left in the season, not counting the Pro Bowl. Sean?
Let's do it.
CBS. 3 p.m. East Coast, noon West Coast.
We'll make our picks and then do some props, right? Do you have any?
We can figure something out, Sean. We can figure something out. New England heads to Denver, where Denver opened as a 7-point favorite, total at 54.5. The line dropped all the way to 4.5. It's now back up to a consensus 5.5. The money line is +210 on the Patriots, -250 on the Broncos. The total is now 56. Here's the breakdown of the money, Sean. 76% of the spread tickets are on the Patriots, 65% of the tickets on the over, and 80% of the money line tickets on the Patriots. A lot of money coming out of New England, in spite of some of the news about Tom Brady. I don't know, Sean. I got to be honest. Sitting down, you know, people are bringing up, like, the last time that both number one seeds got to the Super Bowl was 2006 with the Saints and the Colts. But here's my thing, Sean. When did these teams play last? Do you remember what week it was?
I remember the game, but I wasn't able to watch it. I was actually at a Lakers game, the one Laker game I went to.
I think it was later in the season, right?
Yeah. Denver, I mean, it was cold weather, I know that, so probably early November.
The point being, I believe when they played for the first time, the spread was New England by, it was like New England 2.5 pick, something like that.
Oh, I thought Denver was a road favorite.
Sorry, that's what I mean. Denver was minus 2. It was either 2.5 or somewhere between 2.5 and a pick, right?
Yeah.
All right, so just transpose that spread. What should that be? 8.5.
Yeah.
In Denver. So why? What is going on with this line? Why is it what it is? It seems very confusing to me.
Yeah, well, they opened it at 5, which means...
So let's say...
I take that as a sign that they're waiting for the market to decide the number.
Really? Well, you think they just didn't know?
Well, you got to factor in the championship game. I think a championship game, you're going to have much more public money. So
New England actually closed as a 1-point favorite in that game, but it opened as a Denver 2.5.
Yeah, so I think in this game, they're going to let the public... There's so much more public money in an AFC-NFC championship game, although it was a Sunday night game.
But do you remember how that game went?
Yeah.
Denver was up 24-0.
Yeah.
Anyway, so long and short of it is, it's hard to take chalk when it comes down to this because winning the game is so important and it doesn't really matter how much you win by. I would argue that in the regular season, there maybe is a little bit more style going on. But I just don't see... I think people are overthinking it again, and I think I really thought this line was going to open up around 7 and bounce between 6.5 and 7.5. I don't see how you take New England unless you're getting 7.5, to be honest with you. I think the only edge they have in this game is Belichick. I think across the board everywhere else, Denver is a better team, and they're at home. And neither
defensive back just out.
When's the last time you saw Tom Brady throw the ball 20 yards downfield?
Oh, see, I think that's what they're going to do this year.
You think they're going to stretch it out?
I think
with
they're
going
to open it up. With Edelman?
These are like small white guys that run over the middle. They need to get one of their stretch-the-field receivers involved. And,
Garrett Blunt out of the backfield, I think they're going to be throwing a lot more than they did against Indy.
Oh, like definitely. We agree on
to
that.
To me, this game and the flexibility you have here with the line, to me, this is all about playing the number.
Yeah.
For me, if I can get 7.5 plus 7.5, this is not a cop out. I think this is going to be a close game. So if I think I can get New England at 7.5,
you're not going to get
at a decent price at maybe a minus 120, 125. If it gets up to a true 7,
it should.
Okay, so if I can get Patriots at 7.5 minus 125, that's what I'm going to do. If I can get minus 125 at the similar price for the Broncos at minus 4, then that's the way I'm going. To me, this feels like a close game. I don't know why you wouldn't want near a touchdown in a close game.
Yeah, I just don't think it's going to be a close game. I think the good game will be the Seattle. Actually, I think both these games could end up not being as interesting as the last couple weekends of football. I just think for me, it's. Now, granted, I haven't looked at the weather forecast, Sean. Let's pull that up.
Right. And check out the blogs. We'll have more.
All right, Sean. I love the Broncos. It's going to be 50 degrees and sunny with almost no wind, at least right now. Anyway, my point is, all year, Denver, great offense, one of the greatest offense ever. And I think a lot of people, I'll even take you through this was my thought process, Sean. Indy, I think most people would agree, not a very good road team. A decent team, but on the road, they were definitely a better home team than they were on the road.
Yep.
And I thought that the line last week should have been closer to 10. It was 7. Still, the Patriots covered. They probably didn't deserve to win by 21, but they deserve to cover that game, no problem. So I kind of view both teams a little fraudulent. Indy, because they're on the road. New England just hasn't really done much. They haven't really played anyone. They've won games because they have superior coaching and Tom Brady. Now all of a sudden, this happens, and we're talking about how clearly the public's all over New England. New England's going to beat. It's like, do we forget what Denver did all season? I understand Peyton Manning in the cold. I'll be the first one to bring that up. But if the weather is what it looks like it's going to be, I think it helps that it's the day game in Denver and not the later game. My concern for the Patriots is, and I know Belichick, the X factor is Belichick. He seems to be inside of Manning's head, but I don't see where do they – they've lost so many players in that D. How do they possibly – they're not playing a Colts team with T.Y. with one player. They're playing a Broncos team that has Julius Thomas, Eric Decker, Wes Welker, Demaryius Thomas, Knowshon Moreno, Monty Ball, and Peyton Manning is going to shred them, I think. And I think their defense being at home and kind of being in one of those opportunistic defenses, I think they do just enough to win the game. And I mean, to me, this feels like a definite over game, definite over game. And it feels like a game that could be like a 42-31 type game.
Now, what's the, I agree that I like the Broncos to a degree, but to me, if it gets over a touchdown,
I agree with you, but I'm saying,
Give me that.
Seven or less, I'm taking the Broncos, flat out. That's my call.
Well, here's the thing. If I'm taking the Broncos, I want it -4, -110. Now, I get that?
Yeah, but Sean, what you just said is basically, I want two unrealistic lines. I don't think the line, I think you have a better shot of getting 7 -120 at some point. I don't think it's going to creep back down to 4. Unless the public overreacts to the news that Brady is healthy. He's actually going to play. Yeah, we get it. He's going to play. We know he's going to play.
I think I'm probably going to honestly probably end up staying away from the score itself and go Prop City again.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for me, it's a game I'm going to look towards the over. I'm going to look towards the favorite, and I'm going to look towards a tease. Figure out a way to get Denver in a tease.
Now, yeah, you're talking about a coordinated tease here. I like the Broncos tease them down to pick them and tease down the total. That's, I think, the play,
so
right?
Yeah. I mean, so what would that be? That would be
What's the total at right
now? Let's use the LVH line. And so you'd get Broncos plus a half over 50.
Yeah, that feels pretty good, right?
Yeah.
28-24 game.
It's one of those things, like, I feel like we're just doing a little too much overthinking. Like, if before the playoffs
started, you're right. I think,
if you had said it's going to be Broncos Patriots in Denver, you're like, oh, well, same game in New England, I probably give the Patriots a slight edge, but I know what the weather's like up there and how Peyton just is mind fucked about.
Well, I think you nailed it on the head, is that they have their weapons are so vast that it'll be hard to kind of shut down one particular thing they do right. They have a much more well-rounded offense.
And I think you're going to see Denver run the ball a lot against this team.
Really?
I think when they need to, they're going to run. But I still think they're going to put up a ton of...
See, I feel like they let the dogs loose, both sides, and let both quarterbacks air it out. Especially with the favorable weather.
There are a crap load of props.
Let's do it. Guys love props, Ryan.
There are a crap load of props. Let me pull up the regular props first. The old regulars. Obviously, you have the team to score first, blah, blah, blah. I don't care. Let's just do player props, right?
Okay.
So where are you looking to go in this? See, I would think I want to go over on a lot of stuff. I think it's going to go over. I like just taking some of these over props, like Peyton Manning. I mean, come on. Peyton Manning is going to throw for a lot. I think the key is find the receiver you think he's going to throw the most to.
Or just take the over passing yards. I feel like this is a game where he could...
I don't see a Peyton over passing yards right now.
Well, do you think it's going to be that much different than that line?
Probably not. It's probably going to be about 325, 330. Brady's is the same, 270. I like betting Demaryius Thomas to score a touchdown. Yes, -130. I mean, he's the best receiver on the field.
Just blindly LeGarrette Blount under.
Yeah,
I feel like there's no way.
Huge
do that
line.
Again.
It's up to 78.5.
Yeah, I mean, doesn't that? We were saying when we were watching that Colts game, no way he lets LeGarrette Blount. Belichick score a fifth touchdown because that gets his head too big.
Oh, no.
And his dick too hard.
Yeah.
Belichick knows better. He's going to start wanting a better contract. So I think LeGarrette Blount gets worked out of the game plan because they showed too much of that against the Colts.
Sean, longest field goal, over under 45.5 yards.
Love the over.
Yep. I'm with you. Two very good kickers at altitude with what is forecasted to be low wind. Now, that's going to be a prop I'm going to wait till game day to play.
Right, and that's why you got to follow us on Twitter for these late-breaking updates.
Of course. I also like total sacks.
Mm.
Under 4.
Okay.
Uh, two quarterbacks that just don't get sacked, period. They might take some, and neither team is a great pass rushing team.
Yeah, I think they'll take a.
I'd like to do a little
intentional grounding before they take a sack.
I'll do a little bit more research on that one, but I like that one. I mean, when you get down to the just classic Super Bowl props, will there be a? Sure. Do I want to lay minus 1800? No. But will there be a safety? No. Will there be a two-point conversion? I'd probably take the no there. Will there be overtime? No. I love all those props because that shit's not going to happen. It's fun to think it's going to happen and take 10-1, but it's not going to happen, Sean.
No.
Largest lead, over under 14.5. I like the over there.
I like the under.
I think this game could stretch out. I mean, you see the trend of where I'm going with a lot of my props.
I'm leaning the similar fashion, but I got to say, I think it's going to be a closer affair. And that's why I like the idea of our coordinated tees, Broncos, over. That feels good.
It does seem like a parlay or tease or whatever you're going to do. If you like the Patriots, you're probably going for more, I would guess, for an under. So, Sean, here's the props that I'd never seen before. They're props like this. Danny Amendola to record 10 or more receptions, plus 700. Things like that. So,
oh, wow.
Where you're getting, you know, outrageous things that might happen. So this is one of those situations. Eric Decker didn't do anything last game.
Yeah.
The Patriots are going to look to shut down Demaryius Thomas and Wes Welker. You mark my words there. Decker could have a huge game. Decker, over 125 yards. That's not crazy. Plus 550.
Oh, wow. I love that.
Plus 550. I mean, look. These are fun. Like you said, Kenbrell Tompkins. Maybe he's the guy that is the deep threat. Over 75 yards, plus 600. I mean, it's not going to be Edelman or Amendola, in my opinion. LeGarrette Blount. Wow. There aren't... You know what? They don't have the unders, though. These are all overs. Because I would love to do, like, LeGarrette Blount under 50 yards and get some plus odds. Some of these are just... Like Shane Vereen. You think he's going to be the X factor? Over 100 receiving yards. 8-1. There's definitely an opportunity to get some nice props in here. Peyton Manning to throw 6 or more touchdown passes, plus 1,000.
That's crazy.
Yeah, no, some of these are really crazy.
Okay, so yeah, like I said, I like the Broncos at minus 4.
I like over. I like everything that kind of leads to an over. I like there's gonna be a lot of yards. I think what you said about Blount is accurate. It's just a perfect time to fade him.
Yeah. The props I like over Manning passing yards under LeGarrette Blount.
The last thing I'll say is I'll probably end up putting a couple dollars on the I'll bet the Broncos will win by 14-17, 9-1, 18-21, 11-1. I'll probably bet both those.
Ooh.
I like how it gives you that full touchdown window. Anyway, moving on, Sean. Who are you gonna take in this game then?
Well, that's what I'm saying.
All right, wait on it. We'll wrap up.
My pick is based on the number. So
you know why,
I'm gonna
Sean?
Wait until it gets closer to kickoff to officially go. But if it jumps up over to 7 or moves to a 7, I'm probably gonna lean Patriots there and take them. But if it goes down a little bit more, I might take the Broncos, but right now I'm going with the Broncos tease the under down.
And you know why you're doing that, Sean?
Why?
Because amateurs play teams, professionals play numbers. I'm trying to pay you a compliment.
Me, it all feels about the number, that one, yeah. Especially.
So, yeah, I'll say I like...
When it opens at 5, to me it's all about the number. And I'm not trying to sound like a douchey guy trying to sell you picks here. But yeah. When it opens at 5, they're in that weird zone where they're letting the market decide. So to me, this is all about getting the number at the right time.
Isn't that what Simmons dubbed the Vegas zone? The 4-6 range means they just aren't sure.
Especially with this much public money.
All right, Sean. Yeah, so I'll endorse Broncos up to 7. The total I'm going to look towards, but 56 is a big fucking number, but it still feels like a good bet. Anyway, San Francisco, hottest team in the NFL, heads to Seattle, round 3. This is obviously the matchup everyone wanted to see. Spread opens at 3.5. over under 41. The spread is now 3.5. The money line, Seattle minus 200, San Francisco plus 170. I'm going off of the sportsbook spy consensus. Okay. Sorry, Sean. I've seen it lower than that too. And the total is now 38.5. Tremendously low. That's like a Ravens Steelers game total.
38 and what?
38.5 for the total.
Wow.
The spread, 68% coming in on the dog. We're seeing a similar trend as the first game. The dog is just getting the work. Money line, dog's getting 2/3 of the action. And the total, the over is getting 57% of the action. At 38.5, I'm not sure how you can play an under there. 38 is a pretty low total. So for me, Sean, of course, this is an interesting game for me from a handicapping perspective because I have Seattle.
Real quick, Ryan.
Go for it.
I just was hoping you could congratulate Jim Harbaugh. First 3 years as an NFL coach, yep. All three is taking this team to the NFC Championship.
Yep. Well, maybe in a year from now, he can hang out with Bill Levy or whatever the head coach of the Bills was. look, you got to win something. You know who the last team to get to three straight conference championships was? Maybe it's three straight NFC conference championships?
Who?
Come on, Sean!
Oh, the Philadelphia Eagles?
The Philadelphia Eagles. You see, you're an Eagles fan and you forgot about it because they didn't win. And it doesn't matter what Jim Harbaugh does. They got to win. I will say this. Both teams in this matchup, their window is closing.
Really?
You've seen the – well, here's why, Sean.
I think
– I don't know if we've talked about it on the show, but the advantage you have as a team that's paying their quarterback $1 million, let's just use that as the number – versus most good teams, look at Denver and New England, who are paying their quarterbacks around $20 million, is huge. And guess what? Russell Wilson, Colin Kaepernick, they're not going to be on this contract forever. So I think it's I really believe that, yeah, they're going to be competitive teams. Look, they're in the right direction. The franchises are doing the right thing. But they essentially have, you know, the salary cap's what, like 130, 135, something like that?
Yeah.
So you're talking about, you know, spending up 1%, less than a percent of your money on your quarterback versus 10 to 15%, that's a huge edge. So yeah, for sure, I think their windows are definitely going to close a little bit. They might still be competitive, but
well, that's one reason why I like the Eagles. Well, I was born into it, but the one reason I like the Eagles moving forward is Nick Foles potentially look. I mean,
did you say I was born into it?
Born into being an Eagles fan. I kind of cut myself off, but the reason why I'm optimistic about the Eagles moving forward, or a big part, is you have a franchise QB, a guy who led the league in QB rating at $700,000 for a couple of years.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's a great tool. You're going to have a lot of cap space, and you have a guy very familiar with the college ranks who hopefully has a strong draft.
And Sean more or less just quoted Lady Gaga. He was born that way. So, so look, Seattle.
I also have a meat dress.
Yeah.
It's very
look, I'm into it. San Francisco has the Seattle. The 12th man will be rocking. I'm not sure there is anything as impressive. I mean, look, I've been to domes and it's loud and you understand it's loud, but an outdoor stadium that gets that loud, that's just impressive. And the you know, let's pull up the weather, Sean. I'm not sure it's really going to play a role because I think both teams are meant to play in shitty weather. Oh, no. What's going on here?
Ryan,
anyway.
I'm just not going to bet against Seattle at home.
Well, that's what I was getting at.
I'm going to come out. We can pull out your Pythagorean theorems.
47 with a 20% chance of rain. Hmm. Not much wind.
So
go.
You just can't bet against Seattle at home right now. You just can't do it.
Yeah, it's one of those things, right? Like,
I mean,
right,
if anyone's going to knock them off, it's going to be the 49ers.
Yes.
But for me, Seattle money line all the way. If you're worried about the juice a little bit, buy that 3.5 down to 2.5. That's what I'm saying right now. As of today, you don't want to be caught on the bad side of that 3. This feels like it could be a 3-point game.
Yeah.
So, and if you're a 49ers fan, I get it. there's a lot. There's a great angle to be had on the 49ers. Super hot team, very good on the road in the playoffs. But to me, this Seattle team just looks like a team that's able to control stuff. Russell Wilson seems very calm at home. I give the slight coaching edge to San Francisco here. And I am concerned about Russell Wilson's performances of the past, but I am still going to lean, or I'm going to say Seattle money line or Seattle minus 2.5, depending on where the number shakes out.
I'm with you. It's going to be tough to lay 3.5. I think this is a game where you look to the dog or you pass. I'm very worried about. Here's the thing. San Francisco does their thing against Carolina. They get in their heads. They're chippy. They're physical. That works against every other team in the league, but not Seattle. Seattle's the one of the few teams that's more physical than San Francisco and has the capability to beat San Francisco up. I mean, the last two times they played, week 16 last year and week whatever it was this past year, they beat them by a combined margin of 55 points. So, you know, again, much like with Denver and kind of their dominance all season, I think we're finding a way to overthink it. We're finding a reason to overthink this. And as a guy who has, you know, money on the Seahawks at 15-1 to win the Super Bowl, I'm certainly probably going to be hedging. I'm probably going to bet a little San Francisco plus 3.5.
Yeah.
That was my original thought. The more I think about it, the more, much like game one, I think this could be a blowout.
Really?
So I might just take San Francisco money line. I'm definitely look, all things even, my play would be buy it to Seattle. Like right now, I can get Seattle minus 3, minus 120, 125, I think. That would be my play. But because of where I'm already staked, there's no reason for me to wager on Seattle in this game. If I want to let it ride, I let it ride. But if anything, locally on this game, I bet San Francisco. So, and I think the difference in this game will be, let's see what Colin Kaepernick does when they can't run the ball. That to me is we've seen Russell Wilson in games where they're shut down by the Rams and Russell Wilson figures it out. I don't think we've seen a game where we've seen Colin Kaepernick have great games, like when he threw all over the Packers and, you know, some other teams, but we haven't seen him do it in games where they aren't allowing the Niners to run. It's an optional thing when they do it.
Seattle to me, at home, they've won in a variety of different situations, right? Like
real quick, Sean, the last thing I want to say before you dazzle us with your points. I think the main other thing is San Francisco has physical receivers. And again, I think the one team that matches up with them better than anyone is the Seahawks and their physicality. Look, Anquan Boldin is a slow guy. You just got to be physical with him. Well, here come the Seahawks and their massively physical safeties. And I think Sherman's going to shut someone down. And I think I want to see Kaepernick try to throw on the Seattle team. I don't believe he can do it. I think he's going to be running for his life. I think they're going to spy him properly. And I think the crowd's going to be yoked up. So that was my point. It's just the receivers. I don't see how the receivers can have a huge game.
I agree. And
twice we agreed.
Well, to me, I'm not as high on, like I said, if that New England line closes at 7 or 7 and a half naturally, I think that's what I'm going to end up pulling the trigger on.
Yeah.
But Denver minus 4, okay, I'm on board. Yep. You got me. I'm in it. I'm hooked. I took the bait. I'm going down with the Manning ship. Now, this game, I like the over, like you said. You can't play the under here.
Well, you could, but
38, you're crazy. And you're going to be drunk, and you don't want to bet an under on a late game on championship. Take the over there. What was I getting at?
I would just lay off it, personally.
You'd lay off the total?
I think you're right. If you play anything, you got to play the over, but I think you just lay off. Because, honestly, Sean, would you be surprised if the game was 14-10?
No, that's what I said. I like Seattle 2.5. That's what I'm going with here.
Okay.
And like I was trying to get to, Seattle has won in a variety of different fashions, right? They've blown out good teams at home.
Yep.
They've let bad teams surprise them early and come back. They've won divisional games. They've, like I said, they've come back against good teams. They've come back against bad teams. They've closed out good teams in the second half. So for me, that shows that they can win in a variety of different situations, and that's why I really like them at home.
Yeah, and that kind of backs up my point. Like, I haven't seen Kaepernick win when he's forced to pass. I just haven't seen him do it. And, you know, it's kind of a show-me thing. I want to see him do it on the road.
Yeah, I mean, the play for San Francisco makes a lot of sense, right? So they have to do a better job spying, definitely.
Yeah, and at 3.5, they might be the play. I mean, San Francisco might be the play at 3.5, but I won't be playing. I'm probably going to be on San Francisco plus 3.5 to hedge my Super Bowl bet. All right, Sean, a little prop. Diddly. Well, what do we see here? Colin Kaepernick. Oh, they don't have his yardage up. Oh, they do have over under 39.5 yards rushing. I will take the under on that all day, because all you have to do is spy him and he can't. Like, look, we saw it in Carolina. Carolina spied him and he ran for like 8 yards. If anything, I would take the over on Frank Gore, but I don't think that would be where they're going to get their rushing yards. But yeah, so, you know, if you're looking at the player props, you got the Kaepernick props. I like basically under on his yardage and rushing yards. Probably going to stay away from any Frank Gore props. Now, Crabtree. Crabtree's a guy. I actually bet the over on his, I didn't tweet it out or anything, but I took the over on his Bolden. On Bolden's receptions last game because of the matchup. I think, if anything, I would go to Vernon Davis in this game because I think Sherman will probably get Crabtree or Bolden. Sherman will take Bolden, actually, or Crabtree. I don't know what they're going to do with Bolden. He's just so slow. It doesn't matter. I might look to play any Vernon Davis over props, if anything. But really, it comes down to I'm going to play some Russell Wilson props, and I think this is the time for me to pull the trigger on Russell Wilson rushing yards to over 32.5. That's the more likely. I also
can
like
see him putting the team on his back.
I'm not sure why this line is the way it is, but Marshawn Lynch will score a touchdown minus 130. Yes.
What, you think that's a lock?
I think it should be minus 180. Frank Gore to score a touchdown is minus 180. Why is it that different?
Yeah. Why is he that much less?
That's what I mean.
He seems if they get down on the goal line, that's what they're going to do.
Exactly.
Yeah, Marshawn Lynch to score a touchdown. Although I don't know if I like him going over his yardage.
It's 90.5. I would.
Yeah,
that seems like it might be. Although who knows? They've beaten him up before, and Marshawn Lynch has had good games. Some fun bets to make. This is kind of a crazy, you know, Niners and Seahawks both score defensive touchdowns. That's 20-1. If you like Anquan Boldin over 150 yards. 11-1. Some of the props I might be looking to play. I like. Oh man, Sean, some of these are crazy. San Francisco. Here's an interesting one. San Francisco scores a defensive touchdown and wins the game plus 750. That's interesting because that's a huge decider in who wins games.
Yeah, if they do score a defensive touchdown, they probably will win the game.
You probably can just say we'll score a defensive touchdown. It's probably a similar payout, or should be at least.
No, because defensive touchdown in a game is usually, yes for a special team or defensive touchdown is usually like plus 180.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, then yeah, then that's definitely something you might want to look to bet there.
Yeah, but I don't think they're going to score one, so.
Another. Russell Wilson scores a rushing touchdown and Seattle wins the game 8-1.
Yeah.
I do like, here's the one that I would endorse. I think Vernon Davis, 7 or more catches, 9-1. I think that could be the area they try to exploit. So I might look to pound some overs on Vernon Davis if I wanted to find something on San Francisco I liked. But I don't know. I think all in all, I want to sit down really, because when you get down to two games, you gotta get some more action out there, Sean. the other bet that I really interesting, both Denver and New England love to defer. So it's interesting. Who do you take in the third. Normally, Denver third quarter has been killing it, but it's an interesting thing where they might not get to start with the ball.
Oh, as they both defer.
They both always defer. I don't know. I'm pretty excited. There's lots of action out there. There's tons of props. We'll put together some props in the columns. What do you think?
I'm gonna put some blogs out.
Maybe for the conference championships, we'll just flat out give you some extra props.
Yeah, throw them all out there.
But yeah, Sean, should we do a lock?
Yeah, what's your lock?
A dog and a. I guess the dog. It's kind of tough. I don't know. For me, the lock. I don't know. Let's just throw out our normal shit and just say this is probably what I'm going to do this weekend.
Sure.
Denver, Seattle. Denver, Seattle, money line parlay. Actually,
what's that pick?
Denver, Seattle, 7-point tees. And while you're at it, I'll go all four because I always do this conference championship. I do a four-way tees. Denver to +1.5, over 49. Seattle +3.5, under 45.5. That's going to pay like +300.
All right. I'll weigh in on that as well, but I'll tease it. I'll tease the Patriots and the over.
Okay.
And then I'll tease Seattle and the over.
Well, see, honestly, the smart move there, now that I think, is you should tease San Francisco. But I am worried Seattle blows them out, to be honest with you. Which is giving me a little worry in my hedge opportunity, which I keep flipping between trying for the middle hedge where I take 3.5 and Seattle wins by 3, I win both ways, or do I just go +170?
I like the 3.5, honestly. My lock was Seattle -2.5.
Okay. Yeah, I would say my lock is probably can you take a money line with your lock?
Go for it.
My lock is Seattle money line. They're not going to lose it. You know what? Let's see what Denver. So if you parlay Denver and Seattle money line, it pays plays +130, +125.
Hmm.
Not a bad wager. I got to be honest with you, Sean.
What, Denver plays first, right?
Yeah. There's nothing I'd like to see more than the best offense in the league versus the best defense in the league.
Denver Seattle Super Bowl.
I mean,
it's coming.
It's suck. You normally don't want that to happen. I feel like I've never rooted for that in my life, but I feel like I have reasons to hate the road teams. I have no reason to hate the home teams. I feel like the Super Bowl is more interesting. Do we really need another San Francisco versus? I mean, I don't know. We get it. New England's I just don't want to see
that. Denver would be a much more interesting Super Bowl in the AFC and Seattle in the NFC, definitely.
It's just the game I want to see. And I would be relatively surprised if it doesn't happen. Now, the biggest X factors are if Kaepernick finds a way to light them up through the air, then I think they'll probably win the game. And I think if Belichick once again creates a situation where Manning has no idea what he's doing. The key with that is can Manning do it for more than two quarters? He always can do it for two quarters, but sometimes he has to adjust into it. Sometimes he figures it out and then Belichick adjusts. If he can beat Belichick with an adjustment or figure out his adjustment, I think it's over. I think the only way is if Belichick uses smoke and mirrors.
I don't know. That I like Denver, but man, part of me just likes that +200.
Sean, I want to. Yeah, no, that's for
it just,
sure. But
just
why,
feels like there's value there.
I'm gonna be looking to play, kind of like what I was saying on the New England game. I probably will look to play something similar in Seattle, where I take for the Seattle game. I'll probably do it a little differently. I'll probably spread it across. Basically, Seattle will win by maybe I'll do the same thing. Seattle wins by 14-17 or 18-21, 9-1 and 12-50-1. I have a feeling that one or both of these games will not. We've had too good of a run. When's the last time, Sean, we've basically had 8 competitive playoff games at this point?
Well, yeah, I mean, some of them were.
Which game? Which was the worst game we've seen in the playoffs so far?
I don't know. I guess you could say maybe that Indy,
New England. For sure. But, I mean, I'd say all in all, it's been a pretty epic playoff first two weekends.
Yeah.
And I just think it's going to end kind of the way it didn't start, and we're going to end up with the top two seeds anyway. I think it feels that way. This is
Denver and Seattle, tough teams to go against at home.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway.
All right, Ryan. I think we did it. Stay tuned for the blogs. We'll break it down in further detail. Always appreciate you guys checking those out. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook. Feel free to post stuff to the Facebook. Get on there. And Twitter, as always, retweeting the picks, whatever your guys' theories are. Enjoy it all. Rate, review, share on the iTunes and Stitcher for the Sports Gambling Podcast. I am Sean, stacking the money green, and he is Ryan.
Sean, I would just like to give a shout-out to the young black kids in whatever city they were that started this LeBroning craze, because it is hilarious. And if anyone has a LeBroning video of themselves or someone they know, please send our way. Lastly, Sean, root for me this weekend. I'm in the League Heads Championship going against the Bad Horse. And I think that's it. Oh, wait. Shout out to our man who sent in the picture of him wearing the rocking the t-shirt.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Alex McKenzie. Shout out to Alex. At Alex, the number 8, Mac, M-A-C, sent in a pretty solid picture of him him rocking the t-shirt with a little cup of Joe. I'm assuming there's nice whiskey in there.
Oh, and I think we got it wrong. We were saying he works at Turning Stone.
My fault.
He's a Mohegan Sun.
Oh, all right. That's the biggest casino in the country, Sean.
Well, he's doing it big, and appreciate the support. Good times, and the LeBroning thing is hilarious. It's on Deadspin. It's just basically these kids running into people and just like falling over. A great flopping video.
Yeah.
Let it ride.